Hey there, sex fans. Welcome back. Today is Monday, July 13th, 2011, and you are lucky enough to be listening to the podcast edition of Dr. Dick's Sex Advice with an Edge, with your host, that savagely scintillating sexologist, Dr. Dick. Huh, that's me. Listen, I don't know about you, but I've been hankering for a big dose of sex education. I mean, I haven't had a good old-fashioned kink-filled podcast in over 2 months, and that's simply not okay. As you probably know, the Sex Education series takes a look at the world of fetish sex, kink, and alternative lifestyles. We touch on topics both familiar and exotic. And I am honored to welcome prominent educators, practitioners, and advocates of unconventional sexual expressions and lifestyles from all over the globe as my guests. Speaking of which, today I welcome the acclaimed author with the biting British wit and pervert extraordinaire, John Smith, to the show. John is the author of Kink and the City, an Englishman in New York. He pretty much redefines writing in this genre, and I am happy to report that his presentation is an enormous breath of fresh air, considering all the stolid, curmudgeonly writing that is done on this topic. So if you're like me, and enjoy a big helping of humor to go with your smut, well, then you better rush on over to Amazon.com and pick up a copy of John's book today. Today's program is once again brought to you by Dr. Dick's How-To Video Library. You know, even though I get tons of email from folks looking for my advice, I can only respond to a limited number of inquiries at any given time. But that doesn't mean that I don't care about everyone who writes in. I do. That's why I've set up the How-To Video Library. You'll find a link to this great resource right there on the front page of drdicksexadvice.com. Look for the Video Library tab. The How-To Video Library is the go-to place for all of you who have sexual performance questions. You'll be able to watch all kinds of deliciously entertaining, delightfully enriching, and oh-so-informative videos right from the comfort of your own home. How sweet is that? Okay, without further ado, let's get on with the show. Welcome to Dr. Dick's Sex Advice, John, and thank you for joining us and allowing us to plumb the depths of your amazingly kinky mind for this sex education podcast. Would you like to say hello to the nice people?
Hello there, nice people.
And because this is the edgiest of my podcast series, you can be certain that there will be a bunch of big fat perverts in our audience too, so you'll probably like to say hello to them as well, right?
This is going to be the edgiest of your, is it? I think of myself in many ways, but the word edgiest immediately comes to mind. British is the one that comes to mind more than anything else.
Okay.
But yes, hello to you raving perverts out there as well. Apparently I share something in common with you, but of course I'm a fairly effete individual, and I refuse to belong to any club that would have me as a member.
There you go. So kinksters of all stripes are some of my most loyal fans, and besides, I include myself in that category too. So I'm really pleased that you're here to speak to us and share your knowledge and information and a bit of your humor, which is legendary, if you don't mind me saying.
Well, I'm a legend in my own lunchtime. Yes, yes.
So, and before we get started with our conversation, I think we need to acknowledge our mutual friend Herbert Mosley. He was the one who turned me on to you, don't you know? And now look where it's got me. So not only is Herbert our friend, but he's also our publisher, and you have way more experience than I in this, so I need to ask, besides this shout-out, do we really owe him our firstborn as well?
Well, Herbert is typical of a publisher, a thin, ferret-faced man continually surrounded by plumes of cigarette smoke, and can be found in all sorts of strange places. But I guess it would be churlish not to reach out and say, Herbert, thank you very much indeed.
Absolutely.
A true gentleman, and there aren't many of us left.
Since we're going to be talking about your book, Kink and the City, An Englishman in New York. And my latest book, Secrecy, Sophistry, and Gay Sex in the Catholic Church, is now in print. Maybe we should start our conversation by talking about getting published, because I know lots of people are curious about that kind of stuff. And I don't know about you, but I had the damnedest time finding a publisher. For years I've been interviewing published authors, and all the while I was secretly green with envy at their good fortune. Did it take you a long time to connect with the right publisher for your rather offbeat manuscript?
It didn't take a lot of time, but it took a lot of effort. I went the traditional route by trying to speak to literary agents. If you think about literary agents, there's often people wonder why you never see a literary agent looking out of the window in the morning. Reason is, of course, they need to have something to do in the afternoon. Plus the fact that my manuscript was not exactly what you would call mainstream.
Uh-huh.
So if an agent had any sort of wit about them whatsoever, they could have seen how there could be a crossover point in my book. But anyway, so I tried that route and got resoundingly ignored. The silence was deafening.
Yes.
I wrote to actual mainstream publishers as well, and got the occasional acknowledgement. But basically, it was a numbers game. I just hit up as many publishers as I could.
Yes.
By doing internet research, and eventually Herbert bit.
Yeah.
So it was a numbers game, not a time game.
Right.
But it is not easy getting published.
Right. I'll say. I've been at one manuscript for over 10 years, and the one that just was published for at least 5 or 6 years. So it's awful, you know. And for the most part, the industry has, in the past anyhow, been closed to people who don't fit a particular niche. Nowadays, folks can publish on their own and be relatively successful.
Yeah, they can. That's a whole different conversation.
Yes.
A whole different conversation. It's often said that everyone's got a book inside them. That may be true, but most of them shouldn't be published.
Right, right, right.
If you're self-published, good on you. Right. And that's all I can say. Without making this a publishing conversation.
So,
stupid.
You were published in late 2010, is that right?
I was, yes.
And how has that been for you? I mean, are you a success? In your own mind, at least?
the book has sold well,
I have to say.
It's the cover, and the book is called Kink in the City. We haven't really discussed what the book's about yet, but it's was written for two reasons. First of all, to make people laugh. Secondly, to give people insight into my particular niche. And also, the manner in which I presented it in terms of its writing and its cover was designed to be to cross over to mainstream. The cover is literally a New York skyline.
Mm-hmm.
With the words Kink and the City written on it. And that was designed deliberately so that people who were just curious would pick it up, and that it wouldn't get any sort of resistance from being stocked in mainstream stores.
Right.
And that seems to have been the case so far. The sales have been certainly healthy. Obviously, if I was with Random House or HarperCollins with a big marketing budget, I'd have sold 10,000 copies. I haven't,
mm-hmm.
but I've certainly sold more than I thought I would, and it's still early days. I mean, mm-hmm. this is sound, without wishing to belabor a point and be give you an awful pun, books have a very long shelf life. And often a book won't even start selling properly until it's been out for probably 6 or 7 months. But obviously we started selling from month one, so I'm pleased. So yes, I'm very, very comfortable with the way things are going.
Oh, cool. So before we get to talking about your book and the delicious smut therein, let's talk about you. And generally at this point in the interview, I allude to my guest's website, and I tell him or her how much I like it, and then I go on to read from their about page so that my audience can get a sense of who my guest is. Unfortunately, I can't do that with you because you don't have a website. What's up with that?
Lethargy. and natural inbuilt laziness. I could once again join the long list of people who write blogs that nobody reads,
mm-hmm.
and there's plenty of those out there. But the other honestly thing, my activity in this area is obsessively private and off the radar. I'm not a public figure.
Interesting.
So I don't, people who know me, and I have nothing to, I have no motivation to put a website and and hawk up dribble on a regular basis to people who aren't going to read it. So that doesn't include your wonderful web page, of course, Richard, but 90% of blogs should be written, like 90% of books, self-published books. And I have nothing to add on a regular basis. So I get on and enjoy what I do with the people I enjoy doing it with, and don't see any need to publicize that.
Right. Would you grant us a little bit of a bio? Tell us lots of interesting things about yourself, where you were born, raised, schooled. Do you like muscle magazines, gladiator movies? Do you have a wife, partner, girlfriend, slave, pet? Anything like that?
Well, I like gladiator movies, but in the old-fashioned way, not the way that you like them. Joking aside, strangely enough, this may surprise you, but I'm actually English.
Get out.
Yeah, I know. It's always a killer, that one. Born and bred in London, and I had a significant other for 15 years who was as kinky as I was. My kink is that I'm about a 4 out of 10. She was about 12 out of 10, and that was tremendously good fun. And then we eventually we split up, and I had 8 years in the kink wilderness. And then eventually I moved to the United States and made a conscious decision to restart my kink life. And that's what I did, and that's what the book's about, about how I restarted that and how I got back into playing again. So that's in a pot of history me. I'm nothing else specifically interesting about me to add, other than the fact that I do like to create scenarios and literary scenarios where people actually find what they're reading amusing, and not suffering through.
Well, thank God, because because it can be devastatingly boring.
It can. I mean, I have read so many. I mean, here, I'm kinky, and I have read so many kink books that have just put me to sleep. But also, or 99% of them, how they had abused childhood, or they were drug addicts at 21, and blah, 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 and how this is all the reason that they are kinky. Uh-huh. Most of the people that I know are completely normal, apart from the fact they're raging pervs. They don't know why they are, they just are. And so I think that this activity can be celebrated, and humor is a way of celebrating it, and that's what I've tried to do.
I feel the same thing about all of human sexuality. I mean, I have this tongue-in-cheek thing about my presentation about sexuality on my sites, and it offends a great number of people.
Well, of course, the thing is, Richard, we actually feel quite sorry for you, because obviously being gay, we know you're going to hell.
Yes.
And that's, so you know, party while you can, because it's going to come to an end.
But and luckily, all you straight kinksters are going right to the pearly gates, because
exactly. There's nothing about us in the Bible, so we got a clean sheet, man. But yeah, party on.
I absolutely love it. I love it. So you mentioned there just a moment ago that you were in the wilderness for 8 years. That's a difficult... I mean, if I was in the gay wilderness or without gay for 8 years, I would be very hard-pressed. Was that the same for you?
Hard-pressed is the word I would use to describe my right hand during that period of time. Uh-huh. I did naturally have a vanilla existence, but I actually... The circle that I played with back in the day, I actually moved away after I split up with my significant other, and it was only the dawn of the internet. I mean, literally the dawn of the internet. So, you know, it was very, very difficult trying to find people again. I mean, back in the day when I played a lot, it was all through contact magazines and so forth. But I had other things on my mind other than kink, such as getting to grips with being newly divorced and so forth. Uh-huh. But it was difficult, and I did, like a lot of kinksters do, you suppress it, you try and pretend, I can get along without it. But eventually you come to realize that it is an integral part of your character. It's part of who you are.
Right.
And you either express it or you don't. And if you don't express it, it's going to find other ways of expressing itself.
Yeah. And like that's true, is it not? I mean, that's amazingly true.
I'm not a psychologist, but I mean...
you don't even play one on the internet?
No. But, it's like all these things, isn't it? If you are that which you are, then you need to find the next way to express it. Unless, of course, you're a child molester, which you shouldn't express that. That's a bad thing. Or if you're interested in folk dancing, that's also something you really shouldn't express. But you know what I'm saying. I'm generally saying this, you know, it's try and live who you are, and you'll be happier for it.
Right.
There you are, a token note of philosophy for you.
There you go. And that's going to be well worth the time spent with us, folks. So your book, Kink in the City, An Englishman in New York, is lovingly dedicated to your mother, who you say would have been totally appalled by this.
She would. God bless her heart.
And which makes me laugh, because this really sets the tone for everything that is to come in the book. And you have this marvelous sense of humor, which I want to investigate a little bit more, because so much of what I see in the kink scene is morbidly serious.
Yes.
And it's so about everything, you know. I mean, you know, the right protocols and the right this and the right that, and you have to do it this way and not that. It's like fucking church. But your book, on the other hand, is like you sticking your finger in their eye, and you go out of your way to make light of the whole Megillah. That is your intention, yes?
It is. It is. I mean, there are times to be serious when you're playing, and you know, we all know what we all. If you're a regular player, you know what that is. But let's face it, this activity is funny. it's like, one of the reasons I wrote the book was that J.K. Rowling had made a fortune with the Harry Potter books,
right,
by writing about people living in a fantasy world wearing silly costumes.
Yes.
So I figured that kink was a slam dunk.
Because it is, you know, fantasy people in strange costumes.
Grown-ups dressing as schoolgirls, for crying out loud. I mean, you know. I have a very dear friend of mine who's an airline captain with a very, very big airline, and you know, you can see him when he arrives in New York wearing a mortarboard and gown at some sordid club downtown doing his thing. And it's, you know, these are grown up intelligent people, so it is funny. You have to look from an empirical point of view and go, it's funny, and it's important to recognize this. I think
so too, because I think sex and sexuality is fun and funny, and often both things at the same time. And since this is anathema to so many in the scene, I'm going to guess that you've received your share of negative comments about your blasphemous presentation.
It's actually interesting. The book's currently got about 13 or 14 reviews on Amazon,
uh-huh,
and they're all five star reviews, one's three star. But about 2 months ago, this scathing review came out, which called me mean spirited.
You can say a lot of things about you, but mean spirited, not so much.
And you know, elitist, and it was this completely devastating critique of the book, which made me laugh. And made me grind my teeth at the same time. And two of the other reviewers, for some reason, then commented on that review and said, get out of here, you flake. And the review was actually taken down. But I looked at what other reviews this particular person had done. And the previous thing he'd reviewed was the book on the history of Black and Decker. So it showed you what an interesting man he was. But I have to say, with the exception of two specific people I know who don't like the writing style, it's been received extremely well,
mm-hmm,
by some fairly hardcore kinksters. People like the spin, and what I've got back is that nobody has ever written a book quite like this, or if they have, it's not that well known,
right,
because it is definitely written with my tongue firmly in my cheek. But right, there are some fairly heavy scenes in there. There's a couple of times I do make a point of sort of pulling down the walls a bit and going, yeah, but this is where you can go to if you really want to.
Uh-huh.
But the rest of it is gently poking fun and telling people about real situations and what people are really like in those situations, and what it's like to try and get back involved in the scene when you've been out of it for a long time, because everything changes. Terminology changes.
Right.
Protocols change. Ways of communications change. So I had to come to terms with all that getting back into the scene, and it wasn't easy. And the incongruity of several situations I found myself in just led to comedy, as far as I was concerned.
Right. Do you think that your presentation also makes it more accessible to the novice, or somebody,
yes,
who is just, you know, thinking, well, you know, I see, you know, or I imagine what the scene is all about, and it's all very heavy, and it's all very morbid, and it's all very, you know, closed in on itself. So maybe that's not for me, because I just want to be playful with it.
That's very interesting. And this is why the book was designed this way, for the idly curious. So what's happened is a number of my Kinkster friends who have vanilla friends who know that they are Kinksters have lent this book to their vanilla friends who have found it, to a person, fascinating and funny.
Yes.
Because everybody, even if you're not kinky, you still want to know what goes on in somebody else's backyard. We're all curious to go, what's behind the neck curtains? We're all, we have that lasciviousness about us. And, you know, there are parts of the book which are fairly erotic with a small e, I think. Mm-hmm. And there is an aspect of titillation about that. You know, even if you're not into spanking or you're not into BDSM, most women like dressing up in clothes. And
right.
There's a thin line between that and wearing leather, and then, you know, it's where does one draw that? So I think that it has definitely crossed over. The evidence to date with regard to readers does suggest that this book is being bought by mainstream people as well.
Right.
And I think that people are curious, in so much as, you know, a typical S&M scene or a S&M party or play party isn't necessarily rampant debauchery. It can be, mm-hmm. but sometimes it isn't.
Right.
And you are definitely meeting a whole bunch of perverts.
Mm-hmm.
Perverts can come in all shapes and sizes, and can include some extremely intelligent and interesting people. And
right.
that's been my experience. And I wanted to demonstrate that, basically.
Putting yourself in that category.
Absolutely,
you know.
Of course.
So, you know, you were talking about crossover, and it's curious to me how frequently nowadays the whole SM shtick is in the popular culture. I mean, it's in fashion, it's in the television. Of course, all the villains are, you know, perverts and stuff like that. But still, it's bleeding into, so to speak, into the popular culture. And a lot of it is extraordinarily erotic.
Well, I think a number of things. First of all, and I meant to make this point in the book, if you stick the word spanking into Google, you'll get 17 million hits. Now, that's not a minority sport. 17 million. that's a lot of books. That's a lot of papers about the subject. Point two is, if you show the average heterosexual male a woman dressed up as a dominatrix, that'll get them going.
Right.
They may want to be beaten by them, but they love the image.
Right.
So to a certain extent, it's in all of us to a certain level. And I think that whereas, you know, in the late 50s, you know, you couldn't admit you were gay. Now nobody gives a toss if you're gay or not.
Yes. In fact, it's fashionable, don't you know?
It is. Well, where you come from, it is. But seriously, no. But you know, if someone says they're gay now, nobody bats an eyelid. It's not even a discussion.
It's true.
And I think that eventually it'll be the same with kink, but it'll take a little bit longer than it did for gays. You know, that's my considered opinion. I could be wrong, but I think that's why you're saying it's bleeding into the mainstream, because people are less embarrassed by it now. People are more prepared to express themselves and say, oh, what the hell, you know. Asked and answered, they were.
Right. And, you know, it is part and parcel of fantasy life of people, even if their expression never it goes beyond the vanilla or maybe the mocha, you know. So
sure.
It's a very curious kind of thing. So we give ourselves permission to experience this stuff, at least in fantasy, and so the ability for crossover or the accessibility for crossover is boundless.
Yeah, I agree. People are far more prepared to try things now than they were even say 15, 20 years ago, and the more it's thrown out to the media, the more almost pressure it is to give it a go, give it a try, be more outrageous. You know, it's.
Right.
It just becomes more available and it's not hidden. I mean, you can get anything you want on the internet now, so you know, everybody at some stage in their life has, on a dark evening on their own, has searched out things that are vaguely interesting to them, and once they actually see that they're there and they like them, they'll pursue them. So, you know, thank God for the net, or not.
And we're going to get to that in a moment. But one of the things that is curious to me, and maybe this is why it's the BDSM fantasy or reality is more appealing is that the vocabulary has changed. We now talk about scenes as play, as opposed to whatever it was before. But, you know, when I hear play, that everyone can do that, and it's fun, and, you know, it's, you know, available, and, you know, isn't it great?
I think there's a number of areas to look at with regards to that. I always remember a conversation I had years ago, and I was reading a magazine article that said the average sexual encounter lasts about 8 minutes. And my view was, well, I don't like to boast, but I can cut that time in half. But the reason I mention that, because I'm a bit tongue-in-cheek, with the best one in the world, a traditional sexual encounter is going to last, say, 40 minutes, 50 minutes, okay, if you're, you know, really, really good. You can play a BDSM all day.
Yes.
Also, within a traditional relationship, you know, monogamy is regarded as, generally speaking, the norm, generally speaking. Mm-hmm. Whereas with BDSM, you can legitimately play with other people without having sex.
Yes.
Although it is a sexually driven activity.
Yes. Which is a fascinating thing altogether. I mean, it involves nudity and oftentimes, and it involves, you know, body parts and, you know, intimacy and
absolutely
closeness and all of this kind of stuff. But, you know, just because genitals are not necessarily involved, then, you know, the door's open.
But I think even going to say further than that, without, if one wants to get really philosophical, sure, this level of BDSM is undoubtedly originally sexually driven. Mm-hmm. But at the top end, with really pure play, for a lot of people, it's not even about sex,
exactly.
Although it's generally driven by that.
Yes.
And I found that to be my experience a lot of times, and the people I know, it goes beyond that. It's almost a spiritual activity,
right.
And that's a pretty heavy word, but I'm just putting a moniker on it.
Other people in this series have said the exact same thing, and everybody that I know who is involved in this says basically the same kind of thing, that it is transcendent and that, you know, it is a way of expressing oneself and one's desires and needs, which, you know, doesn't have any other kind of outlet. I mean, it's extreme, of course, but, you know, but so is bungee jumping.
It is. And I can remember a marvelous experience. Certain things stick in your mind. And there was one particular person a few years back I was playing with, and this one was a fairly hard player, and I'm a fairly hard player. And she'd beaten the crap out of me. And then she decided that she was going to switch. So I beat the crap out of her. And, tears and goodness knows what. She was in a terrible state, but thoroughly enjoying herself. And within 20 minutes, we were sitting in a restaurant having a meal.
But not comfortably sitting, right?
Uncomfortably sitting. And you never think, you sort of say, if any of the people in this room knew what we were up to half an hour ago, they'd have been horrified.
Yes.
And yet we were both absolutely flying
exactly.
As a result of the activity and had enjoyed ourselves enormously.
Right. So the opening paragraph of your preference reads, look, if you picked up this book in the hopes of simply reading about salacious kink-oriented experiences to satiate your own base desires, well, in all honesty, you've probably come to the right place, because that's really what this book is about. The title says it all. It's an account of an occasionally amiable Englishman arriving in New York and attempting to rediscover his fetish roots after a long hiatus, and meeting the best and the worst of the subculture has to offer. For indeed, it is a subculture. Could someone who happens upon your book make the leap to thinking that this is really erotica? And if not, how does kink and the city differ from erotica as it is commonly understood?
That's a really interesting question.
Of course it is. It came right out of my head.
And it's far too intelligent to answer. Erotica. Okay. Well, erotica, I guess, at its most base, is masturbatory material.
Right.
At its most extreme. And there is the erotica that gently teases and hints and whatever. This book has some deliberately written funny experiences, but interspersed amongst those experiences and meeting some wretched people, there are descriptions of certain scenes whereby if you are of this persuasion, you would find them erotic.
Right.
And whilst I didn't set out to write it, by virtue of the fact that I'm writing about the subject matter that appeals to people who are reading it, then they find it erotic. There's one particular scenario in there whereby, unexpectedly, I'm in a situation whereby I single tail a guy, actually, in a gay club. And a number of women have said, God, that was hot scene.
I know, I got tumescent, don't you?
Yeah, I'm sure you have. you redefine the word perv, and I love that. I aspire to be...
do you want to be just like me when you grow up, or
I do,
what?
I do. Yeah, it's the moustache. You know? I still remember fondly the village people, and...
Oh, Lord.
But no, what was I going to say? So there's also a couple of scenes where I describe my own bottoming experiences whereby someone's wailing on me. Mm-hmm. And a number of people said, God, that was a real turn on. But those, I didn't, when I talked about those scenarios, when I actually got into the minutiae of a scene, I wrote them straight. I didn't write them to be funny.
Right.
Because I wanted people to go, this is what it's really like. This is real, and it's to give people a mental slap around the face as they're reading the book.
Right.
So it wasn't written as erotica, but I think certain sections could be classed as BDSM erotica, yes.
Yes, yeah. I think so too. And some of the best that I've ever read.
Well, thank you. God bless you, Doctor.
Absolutely. I'm counting on that check, don't you know?
Yeah.
So all of the stories in your book are real.
Oh yeah, it all really happened. I mean, I've compressed time in certain areas, and I've disguised people, obviously to protect the innocent.
Such a gentleman.
I know. no, it's all absolutely real. All absolutely real.
Oh, cool! I just love it. I absolutely do. You used a term a little while ago, just moments ago. Single tail. What does that mean exactly for?
I thought you were supposed to be in the business.
Yeah, but I'm not your intended audience. And
I thought you were
a
Gus Strokey Beard type, you know, opining from on high on human sexuality. A single tail. Imagine Indiana Jones whip without the rigid handle, and it's a single tail whip.
It's like a bullwhip.
Bullwhip.
No kidding.
Yeah, bullwhip. Yeah, it's grown up stuff. That is.
I guess. Holy cow.
Yeah, the reality is, I mean, let's say Indiana Jones style whip. Indiana Jones has got like an 8-foot whip that people, there's only a very, very, very small number of people who would use that sort of a whip.
Right.
3 to 4 foot is generally speaking the most usable and effective size for theatrics and for inflicting harm.
Right.
And takes a lot of skill to use properly.
Right. And a single tail would be opposed to a flogger, which has many.
Yeah, a flog is like the old military cat o' nine tails,
right, with
straight strips of leather.
Yeah,
that's a flogger, and there's actually a page in the book which describes every implement and what you should look for and what you shouldn't look for. Floggers are generally speaking not feared that much, whereas a single tail is feared because it can.
I'm scared already. Sitting way over here, and you can't even get me. So there you have it. So I'm just looking at my clock, and I see that our time is up for today, and I have lots more that I want to talk to you about because you're so charming and engaging and funny. Besides, there's tons more stuff about the book that I want to chat with you with. Any chance you could come back next week?
Well, but by that big fat check block, I can come down off Mount Olympus and grant you an audience. I'd be delighted to.
Good. Great. So generally at this time, I ask my guest to give us his website address, but you can't. But you can tell us where we can buy your book.
Well, basically any sucker that's going to stock it, really. No, seriously. It's available on Amazon as a paperback and a Kindle download. It's available at Barnes & Noble as online as a paperback or a Nook download.
Uh-huh.
Borders is up at Kaboo, Google Books. Basically, just go online. Any online store will sell it, either paperback or a electronic download.
And just about any bookstore will order.
Any bookstore will order it, yes. It's distributed through a well-known publishing house. So... if you walk into your local bookstore and say, can I order this, they will be able to order it. It is stocked actually physically stocked in some bricks and mortar stores, but it's the distribution is fairly spotty, if you excuse the expression. But it's best to order it online, I would say.
Okay, cool beans. And so until next week, we will be searching for you on Amazon and Barnes & Noble and every place else we can find you. Thanks for your time.
My pleasure.
Bye.
Bye.
What a marvelous show, huh? Well, that's it for today, sex fans. Tune in next week at this time for part two of my conversation with John Smith and more Sex Advice with an Edge with your host, me, Dr. Dick. Again, this week's podcast sponsor is Dr. Dick's How-To Video Library. Listen up, buckaroos. Thanks to this amazing technology, you'll be able to watch your choice of smut from the comfort of your own home. With just a little prompting from you, they're going to come gushing out of your computer like nobody's business. Check it out. You'll find a link to this fabulous sex resource right there on the front page of DrDickSexAdvice.com. Look for the tab that reads Video On Demand. There is no membership fee. This is a pay-per-minute kind of deal. So remember that your pay-per-view minutes allow you to watch whatever content you want for whatever length of time you choose. Pretty gall darn sweet, huh? One final thing. I want to take a moment to invite you to check out my product review site, DrDickSexToyReviews.com. That's right, sex fans. Now you can see what's hot and what's not in adult products. You'll find reviews of all sorts of adult goodies, sex toys for sure, but also condoms, lubes, herbal products, fetish gear, as well as educational and enrichment videos. Don't miss a single one. Again, the address is DrDickSexToyReviews.com. Until next time, remember, sex is good, and good sex? Why, that's even better. Over and out.